in the 06010.
The Fantasy Focus Football Podcast is presented by Geico. Thursday, November 12th is here. Field Yates, Mike Clay, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp, the usual Thursday crew. We got a big, big game tonight, and it's a glorious day in the world of sports as, although play was delayed after just 25 minutes, we're going to spend our day watching the Masters, of course, available on ESPN Plus exclusively, and eventually ESPN, and then watch football tonight. You know the last time that you watched the Masters and then watched the NFL live on the same day? It's never happened.
Really? Wow.
You're not a big golf guy, huh?
No. I watch it a little bit, but is that true? Like,
it's usually in April, Mike.
Yeah.
It's usually in April.
The Masters, specifically the Masters.
Oh, specifically the Masters.
Okay yeah,
right.
That one.
All right, that makes more sense.
Okay, I was going to say, because you didn't know that the Masters.
Yeah. Mike's like, why can't golf and football be played on the same
day?
Listen,
while you're watching golf, I'm watching NASCAR. Okay, different interests there.
What is the Masters equivalent of NASCAR?
That would be
Daytona 500.
Daytona 500. Yeah. But I'm saying, like, in terms of, like, would you say it's the most scenic track?
No.
That's tough. probably. I mean, there's a huge lake in the infield. It's in Florida. I mean, there's the airports right there behind it. Right. You know, famous right. for the president. Like, the president comes to the race sometimes, and then you see the plane taking off on the back.
Oh, gotcha. So, okay.
It's pretty good. Maybe out in wine country, Sonoma.
Yeah.
That's not bad. So, I like Watkins Glen myself. Pretty one.
Does Daniel low-key know a ton about NASCAR?
I know more than you probably think I do. My dad was actually really big into drag racing and NASCAR, so I watched a lot of it growing up, a lot of NHRA.
Okay. I learned something new today. We've learned a lot about Daniel over the past couple of days, and I don't know about Daniel himself, but I was blown away by how many people were so enamored by Daniel's story and how many of them had no idea that Daniel had served our country, as we talked about yesterday on Veterans Day. Must have been cool.
It was overwhelming, to say the least, how many people reached out for showing love and support and all of those things. I got to tell you guys, I grew up in a small town in Midland, Michigan, and I could be anybody else that happens to be here, and I have just been lucky and blessed, and I am so thankful and grateful to have the opportunities to be able to work with freaking Stefania Bell, who is a legend, and Mike Clay, who's like a computer, and Field, who is the most handsome man in the world.
Wow.
It is just, I very thankful, and so a lot of gratitude to everything. I didn't really say a whole lot yesterday. It was a little emotional and kind of overwhelming, but I so appreciate everybody for all the kind words, and thank you for having so much love in your hearts. I appreciate that.
Couldn't put it any better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really cool day to celebrate. Well, really cool moment, I should say, to celebrate. And I don't know if cool is the right way to describe that day, as I know it invokes a lot of emotions, a lot of sadness, obviously, for those that are no longer with us because of their service to our great country. But we appreciate them, not just yesterday, but every day. So let's pivot to football, as we know that everybody loves themselves some football as well. For those that maybe tapped out early on the podcast yesterday, late in the show, we got word that Christian McCaffrey was going to have a second opinion. We now have even more information, so we turn to the aforementioned legend, Stefania Bell. What's the latest on CMC?
Well, he's out this week for sure, so everybody should know to make sure you take him out of your lineups. Hopefully you still have Mike Davis, but there's a possibility that he could return as soon as next week. Now, one thing I want to point out, people hear that someone is getting a second opinion and it makes them nervous. Mm-hmm. And in the world of football, professional football, this is not uncommon. In fact, it's more expected than anything else that players will get a second opinion, especially when they have an injury where it's an uncertain timetable. Maybe the way you manage it could vary. And you go to a couple of experts, especially when you have an elite player like Christian McCaffrey. So this makes all the sense in the world to me. And I want to point out, we talked about him having a shoulder injury. I've seen it reported that it was an AC sprain. That did appear most likely. We mentioned it on the show. And if you recall, James Conner tried to return quickly after that and had setbacks that were problematic for him. So, you know, players see these things and they want to find out what is the best way to manage this problem for the interest, not only of this season, but for my career. Christian McCaffrey expects to play a long time. So I think that was the reason for the second opinion, was to get all that information, make a good decision. But essentially, consider it, whether you want to call IC, it says they're day to day or week to week. It basically is going to be, how does he feel? Can he perform effectively? And when did they feel he's no longer at significant risk for suffering a setback?
If you read the tea leaves yesterday from Matt Rhule, the head coach, he made it clear, you know, this week was not going to happen. Made it seem like next week was in the cards. But as Stefania said, we'll evaluate it further as we get more information and we see how Christian himself feels. But that opens up the door to more Mike Davis touches. And Mike Clay, for a while, Mike Davis was just red hot in replacing Christian McCaffrey. Even in the game which he replaced him, basically in the fourth quarter, he finished with seven catches against the Bucs. The last time they played, he cooled off a bit down the stretch. Did you see anything that was different with Mike Davis between the last three games versus the first four games?
Well, usage was down.
3-3.
Yeah, it was 3-3, so he was top 10 his first 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Mike, get closer to the microphone.
Yeah, just pull it up just a little bit.
There really? You go. You can't hear me?
No, there you go. That's better.
How do these things work?
I like that.
Top 10 his first. Are we good?
Yeah, you're good now.
Go ahead, man.
Top 10 his first 3 weeks without Christian McCaffrey, not including that game where he filled in, but 20th or worse in the next three. So he was a little beat up, right? He was kind of in and out. His snaps were down a little bit. His carries were down slightly. The big change really was targets, though, right? His targets dropped from 8.3 to 3.3 per game. But what's interesting is this matchup, right? So we're playing. They're playing Tampa Bay. They've allowed the fewest. What's that?
You could say we. You're a Panther.
We?
Yeah, you're a Panther.
Part of that family. Okay, so they're allowing. If I look, if I was running against them, I would have negative yards for sure because they are extremely good against the run. Fewest rushing yards, lowest yards per carry, just under three per attempt. But they are. This is what's interesting here. They're top eight in targets, receptions, receiving yards allowed to running backs. And we know that at times Davis has seen a lot of targets, right? As mentioned, those first three games, eight or nine per game, it would make sense for them to utilize him in the pass game, right? You don't really want to run it right up the middle against this Buccaneers defense. They're too good in that department. So perhaps he could see that many targets and bail out a decent fantasy day. But I'm RB12. I know we're kind of all 12th or lower on him. There's a little hesitation because you're facing Tampa Bay. You're not going to get a ton on the ground in what we saw those last few games. But for me, he's still a must start no matter what.
I think some other context here is that while we have him 12 and 14 and 16 respectively, which might be a little bit lower than where they were, where he was, during those early slate of ranks, some other running backs are getting healthier on the board as well. So we have a few of our more normal studs that are back and in our rankings, and included there is Nick Chubb. Stefania, as we begin our injury rip, what do we know about the Browns runner?
He returned to practice. This is very exciting. I mean, if you think about it, he was injured in week four, so he was out all those weeks, and week nine was their bye week. He was expected back in practice this week. Kevin Stefanski said he did look good, but he will make the decision on Friday. So we should know by tomorrow after practice whether Nick Chubb will indeed play this week. Following up on him, Joe Mixon back at practice yesterday, but on the side, not involved in practice directly, but keep an eye on Joe Mixon. Antonio Gibson did not practice yesterday for Washington. Kind of interesting what's going on there. We don't know if this shoulder injury is going to keep him out, but Bryce Love designated for return, and Ron Rivera talking up Bryce Love, saying that he looked pretty good. So you could have another running back potentially in the mix within the next couple of weeks. For the Rams, Cooper Kupp appears on the injury report because of a wrist injury, but Sean McVay reassuring folks and saying that he is expected to play. Darrell Henderson not practicing yesterday, but no indication yet as to what his status will be for the weekend. For the Seahawks, Chris Carson, this midfoot injury, again, I've said it once, I'll say it again, more problematic than everyone initially thinks when they first happen. Pete Carroll did say that Chris Carson is running again, so that's a very good sign, making some progress, but unsure of his availability for week 10. I think he's basically setting the table for the potential for Chris Carson to not play. Carlos Hyde still not practicing with the hamstring issue as well. And then for the 49ers, Deebo Samuel not practicing with the hamstring, but remains questionable. I think this is one of those where Deebo Samuel could go down to game time. Tevin Coleman will be out this week. Raheem Mostert, he will be out this week, but he has the potential to return after the team's bye in week 12.
I don't even know how to react to 49ers news anymore, right? It's like, that's good that he'll be back in week 12, but still, mm-hmm. The way the 49ers season has gone, it's like, geez. We We might have 7 more updates on players by the time we actually get to week 12. So a lot of information there from Stefania. Much more on Friday, especially those Seahawks running backs. I think one of the more intriguing updates that she delivered right there, just because, again, as Stefania noted, some people thought, or back after Chris Carson got hurt, like he was determined to play the following week. We're now 2 games missed. Perhaps right. A third is upcoming for them in Seattle. And we saw that backfield at Alex Collins last week. You know, Shell knows that between every tee up, layup, and batter up, that you can't wait to catch up with your favorite podcast. So come to Shell and get 3 things done at once. First, fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus to help keep your engine running like new. Then save up with the Fuel Rewards program and never pay full price for gas again. And finally, snack up with in-store rewards to save even more at the pump. Oh, time to wrap it up. Make the most of the stop you need to make with Shell in engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline. See full terms and conditions at fuelrewards.com.
Do you own or rent your home? Or maybe a villa on the beach, or you have a chateau somewhere? I'll bet you do. I'll bet it's a lot of hard work having all those people helping to keep your home clean. But you know what is easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And it's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save today. It is Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. That was close, but you did it. I'm proud of you.
Thought about it.
I'm proud of you, buddy.
A little more rankings talk here, and let's pick it up with quarterbacks. And one of the more interesting plays this week, we've talked about him a bit, is Joe Burrow, Bengals quarterback who's been awesome all year and coming off of his bye week, so well rested, even though bye weeks are a little bit different this year compared to every other season in the NFL. The Steelers matchup is daunting though, Mike, and I think the question is, all right, can you really trust Joe Burrow as a starting quarterback this week in fantasy, given the Steelers defense in most weeks looks like the best in football?
Yeah, this is a tricky one for sure, because there's some things to like, some things not to like. So Burrow went into the bye number 1 of all players in the entire NFL in OFB, or opportunity adjusted fantasy points. So he had the opportunity in the first half to pace the entire NFL in fantasy points, and he showed some signs of life that perhaps he could do that if the efficiency picks up, and we would expect that, right, from a young quarterback in the second half. The Bengals have a very high-volume offense, right? They're first in offensive plays per game. That's another feather in his cap. Even after the bye, still top 3 in dropbacks, pass attempts, completions, 8th in yards, 5th in OTD, 10th in quarterback carries. He has had so much opportunity so far, and that's really not going to change going forward in this offense. He also is coming off a pair of top 10 weeks, so we've finally started to see that volume turn into fantasy production. But then you look at the matchup, as you mentioned, and it's interesting because the Steelers have allowed 15 or more fantasy points in 7 of 8 games. So they've actually given quarterbacks a decent floor. The problem is there's no ceiling. They've allowed no more than 18 fantasy points in a game. They've been between 15 and 18 in all but one game this season. So if you're in a deeper league and you're like panicking, I'll start anyone, I'll start anyone off my bench. You don't have to do that, right? I think he can give you a 2-touchdown game. The Steelers have given up 2 or more touchdowns in all but 2 of their games this season, but don't expect a huge game. So, you know, to apply this to daily fantasy, for example, maybe in a tournament, stay away. Maybe in a cash game where you need a high floor, you could still use Burrow, who's very cheap in daily fantasy.
Yeah, it just feels fun to play Joe Burrow, by the way.
It is.
The whole Bengals offense is pretty incredible to watch right now. And I don't know if this will matter. This will carry over. Yeah, Justin Herbert as well. I don't know if this will carry over from when we last saw the Bengals offense, but that was obviously in week 8 when they put the Titans. The offensive line played outstanding, which is not something you expected to say about this offensive line based off personnel and also how they played the first 7 weeks of the season. Joe Burrow wasn't sacked once. Won't be quite as easy against that Steelers defensive front, but if the offensive line can keep up its competent play, that this offense could certainly do some damage down the stretch. They're not a playoff team, but they're a team that's going to make life really difficult. They're going to be one of those tough outs week in and week out for opponents. You know, Drew Brees has been sort of interesting this year, Mike. So not the same player that we've seen in basically the past 18 years. He has yet to finish higher than QB8 in a single week this season, but there was a momentum, a movement towards I don't know, the funeral of Drew Brees as a fantasy football starter earlier on this season, but he's sort of just teetered and hovered right around where you need him to be to lock him in as a starter this week, though. Are you concerned at all about the matchup, or you have him 15 on your board? How come?
Yeah, I think that I'm not really buying into him yet. In fact, it was kind of funny.
In a few more years?
Maybe. last week, someone on Twitter was, he may have tagged all of us in that, was coming after us for saying, how can you guys not have Drew Brees in the top 10? Like, what's wrong with you? You guys have no idea what you're talking about. How is he not top 10? Then he threw four touchdowns, and that guy came back and said, see, I told you so. You guys are wrong as usual, blah, blah, blah. He finished QB 11. Look, the point is, just because you throw a few, you know, a bunch of touchdowns doesn't mean you're going to have a successful fantasy week. This isn't 10 years ago or 20 years ago, whatever. It's a new era. And if you don't add any value with your legs or put up a ton of passing yards, it's very hard to be a top 10, a QB1 going forward. So that's my concern. And you kind of mentioned it. He has basically no upside. He has no finishes better than QB8. He's been between 8 and 11 five of his past 6 weeks. So he's given you a high floor recently, but that doesn't mean that's necessarily going to continue. And, you know, as for the 49ers defense, five top eight fantasy weeks allowed, but a lot of that has been rushing. They've allowed the fifth fewest passing yards. They've allowed 16 touchdowns through the air this season. So it is a tough matchup. He doesn't have much of a ceiling. I don't feel great about him as a starter.
Weird. It's really interesting. I think it's so funny to think about quarterbacks that have a ceiling versus a floor this year. I feel like because scoring has been much higher this year on average around the NFL, we have seen all these explosive weeks from quarterbacks, but my barometer on quarterbacks that have a high floor has to be readjusted. We were having a debate about Cam Newton, whether he has a high floor this year. And my argument was he's been a top 12 quarterback in 5 of 7 games he's played. That would make him a high floor quarterback. Matthew feels like he does not have a high floor. So I think this year it's an interesting recalibration of what it means to have a high floor, because there are so many scorching hot weeks from quarterbacks. I mean, guys like Drew Locke will have an explosive week, and then he'll have a 7-point week, right? Or Derek Carr has been reasonable recently. Baker Mayfield's in line for a good week this week. Jared Goff, same thing.
Yeah, gone are the days where if you're a running quarterback, you don't do anything through the air, right? I mean, you can Kyler Murray's on pace to be the first 4,000, 1,000 player in NFL history, right? I mean, it's just a new era for sure. So you're right. You kind of have to do it all right now. So many quarterbacks add at least a little bit with their legs. And if you're Phillip Rivers or Tom Brady, well, Tom Brady does get the occasional rushing touchdown, but Big Ben and, you know, Drew Brees, it's really hard to be a consistent candidate to be top five because you're just not adding anything in that department.
Yeah, it's a different era of quarterback play, that much is for sure. All right, so Christian McCaffrey's out, which means time to re-rank the top running back in fantasy for week 10. Pretty compelling case for Alvin Kamara any week, Mike. Alvin Kamara, you don't know him?
Nope. Who's that?
So he didn't know the Masters was played in April.
Nope.
He's never heard of Alvin Kamara.
Yep.
Anything else you want to reveal?
I just like his name, so I ranked him number one. I don't know. Is he good at football?
Is this like when you... I get it. You rank... Like, you root for the team based off the mascot, which is a totally fair thing to do.
Yeah, that's what my daughters do, right? So I just kind of picked up from them. I mean, it works, right?
The Fleur de Lis really
they ask me who. They always ask me who I'm voting for. They always want to know who I'm voting for.
Who are you voting for?
Games on. Who am I voting for?
Eagles.
The Eagles.
From the Eagles.
Yeah.
Anyways, Alvin Kamara has a very good case to be number one on the board in any given week. Yep. But Dalvin Cook has just been so red hot of late. I mean, just astronomically hot over the past 5 weeks that he has played, basically. So I know that we are nitpicking here, Mike, but you have Alvin Kamara number one on your board amongst running backs this week. I've got Dalvin Cook. What's the case for AK-41?
Yeah, so, and I'm being snarky because I'm going to sit here and make a case for Alvin Kamara, right? Like, obviously, you're starting him. Obviously, we love him. He's terrific. But I do have some interesting things that I've come across. First of all, he is the number one running back so far this season. He's been top 10 every week.
Yep.
He's been top five of 8 weeks. He's been terrific. But this is interesting. So he is on pace right now for 120 catches, 1,130 yards, and 6 touchdown catches. That's 269 fantasy points. That alone would have made him the number 7 scoring fantasy running back last season, or the number 5 scoring wide receiver. That doesn't even include the fact that he's on pace for 942 rushing yards and 10 rushing touchdowns. So that just shows you how insanely productive he has been this season. The 49ers, yes, have allowed the third fewest fantasy points to running backs. They're only allowing 3.4 yards per carry, which is terrific, but they're only average in the pass game, right? And we know that Latavius Murray already soaks up a lot of the rushing work. Kamara does a lot of his damage as a pass catcher, and you can exploit this defense a little bit to that extent. So I still think he's Alvin Kamara, great fantasy play.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is sort of silly to be telling you like, hey, Alvin Kamara is definitely ahead of Dalvin Cook or vice versa. I have Cook number one on my board. Maybe a slightly difficult matchup. The Bears rank 11th against running backs this year in fantasy points per game allowed, 21.1, but Dalvin Cook, I mean, he's just so red, ridiculously hot right now, not just as a runner, but also as a receiver. After going touchdown, 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 touchdown on the Vikings' first four drives in week 8, he went on and scored another 2 touchdowns with over 200 total yards in week 9. He's carrying fantasy teams right now. Just a ridiculous stat. That is November 12th, and Dalvin Cook has scored 87.8 fantasy points this month. That's more than any running back scored during all of October. The guy is just a freak right now. He's playing at a higher level. He is carrying that Vikings offense. As I said earlier this week, I think Minnesota could very well enter week 13 at 7-5 and find itself back in the playoff hunt in the NFC. Look at how their schedule lines up. It is not that crazy of a thought. Next running back ranking involves a certain somebody that is our smart lineup decision, which is informed by IBM Watson. His name is James Robinson, Jaguars running back. He has already boomed 3 times this season. He's got a 25% chance for a 4th this week, which would mean 19 points against a struggling Packers run defense. Mike, he's not on your board. You think he gets there this week?
He's what? He's 9th on my
ninth
board?
Yeah, on your board.
I thought you said not on my board. I was going to say that would be an oversight. Yeah, he's he's a terrific play for sure. 3 straight top 10 fantasy weeks, 5-8 games so far this season. He's had speaking of floors and ceilings, he's had both of those already. Top 6 at running back in carries, touches, scrimmage yards, touchdowns, and 10th in targets this season, which is notable because you may be worried about him getting game scripted out of this, right? If the Packers come out and Devontae Adams scores as usual, 4 touchdowns in the first half, whatever it is, they could be behind. But yeah, James Robinson is still a factor in the passing game alongside Chris Thompson, so he should still be involved in that area. And of course, it is a great matchup. They should be coming in trying to run the football. You would expect that against the Packers. Second most fantasy points and the most touchdowns allowed to running backs with 15 this season. The third most scrimmage yards, 26 or more fantasy points to running backs in every game this season before the 49ers last week. And obviously, they were missing a lot of their key players. So, terrific matchup, high volume. Everything to love here about Robinson.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I'll be interested to see what this looks like going into next year, like how we will rank James Robinson going into next season.
Yeah, because you know, you get nervous about the low pedigree guys, right? Are they buying into him as their long term feature back? Sometimes,
right.
You know, I think about, for example, Miami, right? They allowed Miles Gaskin earned the lead back job, but there was whispers, or they were trying to get Le'Veon Bell, right? I mean, they were in the market and. Who knows what that means for Gaskin next season? It's the same kind of thing in Jacksonville. I do think that he's played well enough that they'd be crazy not to let him be their lead back next season.
Right,
so,
yeah.
But you're right. It's you feel safer with high pedigree, and
sure.
And that aligns with what we've seen in the NFL over the past 30, 40 years. I mean, those players tend to stick around, whereas guys who maybe are struggling earlier in their career get more and more opportunities based on that early round pedigree.
Sometimes you're just too loyal to where you invested a player. We saw Leonard Fournette in Jacksonville. They obviously cut ties before the season began, but you know, some thought they might have done so even a year ago, even after coming off of a pretty strong season. All right, so Daniel has something he wants to ask.
I'm just curious, and you may have, I was going over things, so if you mentioned this already, I apologize. I'll take my Matthew moment here live on air. But Mike, you have talked about how James Robinson is a guy that you think that you should potentially move on from for the fantasy playoffs. With all the workload that you've seen from him and how it's going to continue, we don't see anybody else coming in this backfield. Do you still feel like with the efficiency that he's had as being the guy, that he's still a guy that is a trade target for you at the fantasy playoffs?
I think so because of the schedule. So every week of the fantasy playoffs, you're going to be nervous. You're going to think it's a really tough matchup. He's probably not going to put up a ton of rushing yardage. So that makes me nervous. But at the same time, running back is such a mess. We've talked about this week and week again. He's one of the few reliable guys. So I'm not saying just give him away. But, you know, as mentioned in our league, our show league, I did trade him a few weeks ago. It was a package deal. I ended up getting Michael Thomas as part of it. I think Antonio Gibson was in that. But I would at least explore it, you know, throw some feelers out there and try to get another RB1. Yeah. But I would at least think about it based on his fantasy schedule, because right. It is rough.
It is rough. The really tricky part, and I know you know this, Mike, is that so if you're going to trade him for another running back, you're basically acquiring a player that's either, let's say, 80 to 90% on the dollar relative to what James Robinson has been, or a guy that's got his own concerns, right? So I'm just making this up here. Like, if someone offered you Nick Chubb for your James Robinson, would you take it or no?
I'd probably lean towards Robinson just because, you know, Chubb shared backfield. Again, we can go all into the weeds on this. And
again, my point is that like a lot of them have worked, right?
Exactly. You have to have that conversation with yourself whenever you get an offer or you think about making an offer. No question about it. And look at their schedule as well. And again, it's just schedule. It's one variable. It can be a big one at times. I mean, if you're playing Chicago and Tampa Bay, you might expect 15 carries for 45 yards from Robinson, and maybe you get 30 yards out of him on four targets. I mean, you have to think about that, because that is what happens week in and week out. And there's only a few teams we really have to be afraid of or excited to face, but it matters a little bit. It's something you have to think about. Fantasy football is just a combination of a bunch of different variables. And again, that is just one that you have to consider.
Philosophical Mike Clay busted out here this morning. All right, Will Fuller has a touchdown in six straight games. It's a reminder that when Will Fuller plays, he can be a legit wide receiver one. He's 10th on my board, 14th on Mike's board. You have him right next to Brandon Cooks, 14 and 16, where you have your two Texans wide receivers stacked. Is there maybe a hidden story here that Cooks might actually be the steadier option here, despite the touchdowns for Will Fuller recently?
Well, I definitely want to chase volume over touchdowns. You know me, like no doubt about it. Volume over efficiency over touchdowns, that's the most sustainable. And Brandon Cooks has 9 or more targets in 4 straight games, and he has 3 touchdowns during that span as well. So he's scoring and getting the consistent volume. Fuller, as you mentioned, touchdown in
5 straight games. My bad. Kyle's telling me 5.
I
thought it was 6. Yeah.
I have 6. Touchdown in 6 straight games.
Okay.
His expected number is 3.3 during that game. So he's basically doubling what you would expect for him. So that's going to regress to the mean for sure. He has a total of 11 targets over his past 2 games, but is at 6.8 for the season. If I'm talking about a wide receiver one, I want more than 7 targets a game, right? That's just not enough, you know, especially with the unsustainable touchdown rate. Cooks is getting that wide receiver one volume. Fuller isn't, and that's why it's very close here for me. I do think Fuller's a little bit better. That's why I have him slightly ahead. But look, both are top 15 wide receivers since week 5. It's a great matchup against Cleveland, the 5th most fantasy points to wide receivers, top 7 in targets, receptions, receiving yards, and touchdowns with 12. So again, it's a very close call between the two, but they're both must starts, both top 20 plays.
Yep, agreed on that. That Texans offense kind of righted the ship of late. They've been really explosive, obviously, over the past 3 games. Had a very, very good matchup this upcoming week against the Cleveland Browns. Confirmed that Will Fuller has scored in 6
Not bad.
Games. Oh, you're good. Listen, Kyle, you're allowed one error every 6 years of being on this podcast. We'll forgive you. Mike might not, but I will.
Okay.
So Travis Kelce is out this week, and at some point, man, I wish I had thought of this earlier, because I want to have I have not a rant, but more like an appreciation post for Travis Kelce. I actually have, can I have 30 seconds on this?
Yeah, go ahead. I have 30 seconds on the clock.
From Kyle Soppy that actually helps me paint this picture. So because Travis Kelce, and I'm going to read my phone, so bear with me here. Because he is on a bye this week, maybe think about how great Travis Kelce is and relative to every other tight end. He's also about to hit 5 straight years of at least 80 catches and at least 1,000 receiving yards. No tight end ever, other than Travis Kelce, has 1,000 receiving yards. He can throw away the 80 catch part for 4 straight years. He's about to do it in 5 straight years, plus 80 catches per season along those ways. So I had Kyle look this up because I was thinking to myself, just how good has he been since 2016, the start of that streak, relative to every other tight end? And I just felt like it was fun to look this up. So since 2016, Travis Kelce has 426 catches. That's 46 more than the next closest tight end. 46 more.
That's a lot.
Since 2016, he has 5,497 receiving yards. That's 1,600 more than the next closest player. So, and I know people will say, well, George Kittle entered the league in 2017. Okay, well, George Kittle could literally have the greatest receiving season of all time for a tight end, and still, which would be very difficult to do, even though he did do it himself before, and still be 270 yards short of Travis Kelce. He's got 33 receiving touchdowns, six more than the next closest. He's got he has two more 1,000 receiving yard seasons than anybody else during that stretch. He's got 2,100-plus yard games. That's 10 more than anybody else in that stretch. He's got 58 games with 10 or more fantasy points. This is the meat we're looking for here. That's 16 more than the next closest tight end. He's got 25 20-point games. That's 11 ahead of the next closest tight end during that stretch. And just for good measure, again, 58 games with 10-plus fantasy points. That's one ahead of DeAndre Hopkins for the most amongst tight ends and wide receivers since 2016. The dude is rewriting record books. I know this sounds a little bit crazy because he makes the Pro Bowl every year and is named an all-pro tight end basically every year as well. But Travis Kelce has become one of the most underappreciated players in the NFL. Shout out Travis Kelce. Big fan. Just wanted to say thank you during your bye week. You're not even playing this week, but I've been saying this. I might start you this week just out of respect for all that you have done since at least 2016 and truthfully, even before that.
You want me to do the negatives now, like the anti-Kelce case?
Go for it. Yeah.
So, nothing.
That's it.
There's nothing. I mean,
all right. So that was really a long-winded way of getting into what we need to discuss.
I appreciate that.
Yeah,
someone who loves to just list off number after number. That was good.
That's a Kyle Soppy masterpiece right there. But you know, it does stick out like a sore thumb when he's not playing. How bad the tight end board ends up. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna break our tight ends for week 10 down into tiers, and basically sort of lay them out and let you know where we're at with some of these players. Tier one, there's basically one player that you feel really good about this week, Mike. It's Darren Waller, who consensus top tight end for the week, with both Travis Kelce and, of course, George Kittle not available to play this week.
Yeah, no question about it. In fact, my projections show Waller like 6 projected points ahead of everyone else, just based on the usage that he has had. It's just unbelievable. He's number 2 in tight ends this season at tight end, number 2 in receptions, fantasy points. He's 4th in yards, and he has 4 touchdowns already, which might not sound like a big number, but he had 3 all of last season. And he was a fantastic fantasy tight end last year. He already has passed that total, is on pace for around 8 this season. And as for this week's matchup against Denver, obviously a somewhat intimidating defense, but they're mid-pack against tight ends. 6 most receptions and an 80% catch rate, our 3rd highest. So the competition hasn't been too tough. They've struggled a little bit. It's a good matchup. He's great. He sees a ton of volume. Even with the additions of wide receiver, it hasn't mattered. He's still approaching a 30% target share most weeks. Not much to say. High floor, high ceiling. Love Darren Waller.
Agreed on that. 2-tier tight ends. So tier 2 tight ends, I should say, are players that, like, you know, you like a lot this week. Maybe not necessarily lock it in as a consensus top 5 play every week, Mike. But if you had to pick a player that you really like this week, that's part of that tier 2 of tight ends, who might it be?
I'm going to go Noah Fant against the Raiders. So on the opposite side of the game we just talked about, I have him tight end 3 on my board. He already missed a week with an injury this season. He's still 8th at tight end in yards and 12th in fantasy points. He's a pair of touchdowns. We could use a little bit more in that department. He has been under 50 yards in 5 straight games, a little bit of a red flag, but he's averaging 7 targets a game during that span. So if that usage continues in an offense that just seems to be getting better and better with Drew Lock back and healthy and as they're developing the receivers, I think Fant will be a solid tight end 1 going forward.
Yeah, I agree right there. Mine would be TJ Hockenson, who, Daniel, not trying to pander to you, but I think he looks the part of a star tight end. He's already projecting that way. He's got a touchdown or 7-plus targets in 6 straight games. He looks to me, and I know they have Kenny Golladay, but he looks to me like maybe their best red zone weapon right now. We'll see whether Kenny Golladay plays on Sunday.
I was just going to jump in since you guys are both talking about guys who interest me. One is Noah Fant. He actually aggravated that ankle injury last week. And so Vic Fangio talked about the fact that he's been tough and playing through this injury. He is expected to play. So if you see him on the injury report, I wouldn't be too concerned. I think that might be part of why his production was limited. But Albert O, done for the season with a torn ACL. So Noah Fant, definitely the top tight end. Not that he wasn't already, but they don't have the luxury of having one across the field from him who could threaten to steal catches. And then I don't think Kenny Golladay is likely to play this week, so I do think that helps boost T.J. Hockenson's field.
I agree with you, Stefania. He's got 17 catches, does T.J. Hockenson, over the past three games. Same number he had over the five games before that. So Hockenson trending in the right direction. So tier three tight ends would be players that, you know, you're probably going to see started in any league, 10 teams or larger, which would be all leagues. But there are some mitigating factors here. So, Mike, who's a player that, even if the production hasn't been great this year, maybe has some indicators that he could be a useful tight end this week?
Yeah, I think it's Hunter Henry. I think a breakout game could be coming for him in this Chargers offense. It's been super productive, obviously, with Justin Herbert under center. Look, Henry is top nine at tight end in snaps, routes, targets, receptions, and receiving yards. Pretty much all the key categories, except for one, and that would be touchdowns. He only has one touchdown so far this season. We need to get him more work near the goal line. He's been right in that 6 to 7 target per game range, which is good. That's going to get you tight end one production. And the matchup this week, he's facing Miami. They've been pretty good. I mean, they have good numbers against tight ends, but they've only faced one tight end one. They've only faced George Kittle. That's it. They've only faced him. Otherwise, it's been pretty basically offenses that don't throw to the tight ends too much, although Arizona's tight ends had two touchdowns against them last week. So I'm not too worried about it. I think he's just right there. I think, you know, one or two key or high value targets are going to hit and he's going to go off. So I'm still I'm staying patient with Henry despite him being in a bit of a slump.
That's really frustrating. I just want to talk about Hunter Henry because he's somebody I was hoping was going to be better this year. But when you look at the targets here, like you just said, 8, 7, 4, 7, but 39 yards receiving, 23 yards receiving, 23 yards receiving, 33 yards receiving, yeah. 33. Like he's getting nothing with the targets that he's getting. So hopefully I would love to see some regression to the mean here as we like.
It almost feels like in this offense, their quarterback, Justin Herbert, is so unafraid of risks down the field that it's like Hunter Henry who... He's not an unathletic tight end. He's actually a very athletic tight end, but still, even the most athletic tight ends are oftentimes a couple standard deviations below the athletic ability of someone like a fast wide receiver. So maybe it's actually working against him, his quarterback play, as opposed to working in his favor. Now, my guy for this week is Austin Hooper in Tier 3, but I have to ask Stefania, do we even expect him to play on Sunday?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he was back in full practice. If people have forgotten, he had an appendectomy. That's why he's been out for a couple of weeks. But his first day back, full practice. So I think if it continues that way, you can expect to see him.
And things were trending in the right direction for Hooper. He had at least 6 targets in each of his last 3 games prior to the appendectomy. We saw a bit of Harrison Bryant, 4th-round pick out of Florida Atlantic, but still feels like Hooper will be the go-to tight end in this offense, and with no Odell Beckham Jr., maybe a bit of funneling to players like Austin Hooper and also Jarvis Landry, maybe even some Kareem Hunt in the passing game with Nick Chubb expected back this week. A Truly Lemonade is a refreshing mix of lemonade and hard seltzer that is perfect for game day. If life or your fantasy lineup gives you lemons, make lemonade. Maybe even win your matchup with a surprise standout. Keep the good times going with Truly. Bring the flavor to game day as only you can. We'll keep it light, crisp, and crushable. Truly Lemonade comes in 4 refreshing flavors. Original, strawberry, mango, and black cherry. Truly hard seltzer. Live Truly.
You know the pressure you feel heading into a fantasy draft?
Yep.
You want to make sure you're picking the right guys to get the job done. That's why I always use Mike Clay's projections when I go into fantasy drafts.
Smart.
Whatever your strategy is, at the end of the day, it all comes down to who's on your team. What we really need is something like ZipRecruiter for fantasy football, which unfortunately they don't make yet. But ZipRecruiter in the real world makes hiring easier than ever. And right now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job sites, scanning thousands of applicants and actively inviting the most qualified candidates to apply. That way, you can hire the right people fast. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter find a quality candidate within the first day. Man, imagine if we had something like ZipRecruiter during our fantasy drafts. We'd never lose. Try ZipRecruiter for free today, when you post your job at ZipRecruiter.com/06010. That's ZipRecruiter.com/06010. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Yeah, buddy! 2 in a row! A full show!
A full show of not jumping in too quick. It's time now for a wide receiver cornerback segment. As we always tell you, Mike Clay, is the godfather of wide receiver cornerback matchups in fantasy football. It's a column he's been writing for a long time, available on ESPN.com. The premise is pretty simple. Wide receivers who have either matchup upgrades or downgrades based off the cornerbacks they are facing, but it is hugely helpful. Amongst the notable calls that Mike has made this year include a couple weeks ago when DK Metcalf was riding high and everybody was saying, lock him into your lineups, Mike was saying, I'm not telling you to bench him, but I'm telling you to be a little bit nervous about Patrick Peterson. You know what happened? Two catches for DK Metcalf. Mike speaks, you listen. Them's the rules. So let's get on into our wide receiver cornerback matchups for Week 10, Mike. And we have our touchscreen, which is fun. So I'm going to ask you about a player. You're going to tell me field, you move them right to downgrade. Field, you move them left to upgrade. We begin with Terry McLaurin.
We're going to move him to upgrade because he's facing Daniel's Lions this week. And as Daniel knows, they have really struggled against perimeter wide receivers this season. And look, McLaurin has been heavily targeted, 9.4 per game. He has 7-plus in 7 of 8 games, so that gives you a tremendous floor in fantasy. He's the number 12 scoring fantasy receiver, and he's only scored 3 touchdowns. So wow. He's leaving a little on the bone there. Perhaps he can get that the ship right and going forward in that department. But look, Desmond Trufant back from injury last week. He is still really struggling. I don't know if he's 100%, but it hasn't worked out for him just yet with Detroit. Jeff Okuda and Trufant have both been targeted on over 25% of their coverage snaps so far this season. Both of those are among the league's highest rates. So they both struggled, and as a result, the Lions' 7th most fantasy points to the perimeter this season. That's where McLaurin lines up over 70% of the time. So he's an upgrade.
Not trying to dissuade anybody from what Mike just said. I've been following this because it's been a big talking point in Detroit about how the Lions have been playing more zone coverage over the past 3 weeks. And I think that's probably reflective of when your team is struggling in man coverage. Does not move the needle enough to do anything to Terry McLaurin. Still listen to Mike's advice there. But just a reminder that the coverage struggles in man coverage have been real so far for the Lions this year. DJ Chark Jr. last week was really good, Mike. Who would have thought the Jake Luton to DJ Chark connection would be that strong from basically the first play of the game? What's the status for his matchup in Week 10?
Well, the thing about Chark is we had him on the downgrades last week.
Okay.
But he was supposed to face Bradley Roby, and Bradley Roby, do we have an explanation for why he didn't play to this point? He just...
Team decision.
Just didn't play for some reason.
Not sick, just the team said, don't even bother showing up.
Yeah, and it was not an effectiveness issue because we know he's been really good this year and he's been shadowing pretty much every week. So, nonetheless, he dodged that bullet, and we know, and we said this, aside of Roby, they've really struggled against wide receivers this season. So he feasted, of course, in that game, had the huge performance. But this week, he's going to face Jaire Alexander. He is the number one coverage grade over at our friends at PFF. He has shadowed Adam Thielen this season, who had a big game against him. That was way back in week one, so he started out slow. But since then, think about these receiving lines. For the game, for guys that he has shadowed, Calvin Ridley, 0 catches. Mike Evans, 1 catch for 10 yards. Will Fuller, 3 for 35 and a touchdown. And then he shadowed Justin Jefferson in his second meeting with the Vikings. He had 3 catches for 26 yards in that game. The Packers, with him playing so well, believe it or not, because they've been run over by running backs, this might sound surprising, but they've done good against wide receivers. 6 fewest fantasy points allowed. Chark also does go to the slot a quarter of the time, so he'll escape Alexander, who doesn't go inside. But Chandon Sullivan, another former Eagle corner playing well, he's been terrific inside. Packers' 2nd fewest fantasy points to the slot. So he is certainly a downgrade. And I will add one thing, though. Chark might dodge a bullet again because Alexander is questionable with a concussion he suffered last week. So if he's out, then you don't have to worry about this matchup. But for now, it's a downgrade.
Well, let's keep things rolling here, Mike, with the Bucs. And we're talking about 3 wide receivers every week now. How do you size up Antonio Brown and Mike Evans specifically?
Yeah, and I think we could even throw Chris Godwin into this conversation because if you think back to the first meeting between these teams in week 2, Chris Godwin was out. Antonio Brown wasn't on the roster yet. And Mike Evans had a big game, 10 targets, 7 catches, 104 yards, and a touchdown. And they didn't shadow in that game. Carolina did not shadow. They have most weeks since, and I think they will in this game. So what they've done is Rasul Douglas has covered the big receivers. Dante Jackson or the rookie Troy Pride have been against the smaller wide receivers. So let's think about what that means in this game. Mike Evans mostly lines up on the perimeter. He's probably going to draw Rasul Douglas, who shadows bigger wide receivers. He's 6'5". A little bit of a downgrade. Tiny downgrade here for Mike Evans. Chris Godwin, 71% slot. Carolina is allowed the seventh fewest fantasy points to the slot, so a slight downgrade there. I don't know if we have him on the board, but anyway, in the slot, he's a downgrade. And then Antonio Brown is the big name here. So he's in his debut last week, 87% perimeter. That means he's going to see Dante Jackson and maybe a little Troy Pride in this game. Carolina is allowed the 10th most fantasy points to perimeter receivers, and that's even with Douglas doing a pretty good job on the other side. That shows you that you've essentially funneled a lot of fantasy points away from him. That's where Antonio Brown will be in this game. He gets upgraded.
Okay, upgrade for Antonio Brown, looking to have his more productive game in his second with the Buccaneers. Last one here, Mike, and we'll do a Thursday Night Football game preview, is the Seahawks. They play the Rams on Sunday. Big matchup at the NFC West.
Yeah, so we're going to downgrade both of these guys against the Rams, who have been terrific against wide receivers this season. Actually, if we did a little bit of history here. So if we go back to week 14 last season, Jalen Ramsey shadowed DK Metcalf in that game. It was on him on 28 of his 31 routes. Metcalf did all right. Six catch. It caught all six of his targets for 78 yards in that game. Most of that was against Ramsey. Tyler Lockett has been pretty decent against the Rams as well. 15 plus fantasy points and a touchdown in three of his past four. But there's a couple things here. First of all, Jalen Ramsey is not shadowed this season.
Weird.
At all. They're just not using him that way. There's sometimes he plays on the perimeter and he bounces back and forth. Sometimes he's playing in the box as just a defensive player. Not really, you know, maybe like a little bit more like a Jamal Adams, right? Where he's kind of using a bunch of different ways rather than just one specific position. But he hasn't shadowed Terry McLaurin in the past couple of weeks. He hasn't shadowed Allen Robinson. So is he going to shadow DK Metcalf? I don't think so. The way they've used him, I don't think so, but it may not matter, right? Because the Rams have been terrific against wide receivers, second fewest fantasy points allowed, the fewest to the perimeter, which is where Metcalf is 85% of the time. It is yet another tough matchup for him. And honestly, Tyler Lockett is a better matchup than him in the slot against Troy Hill, but we said that last week. It didn't go too well, so got to downgrade both, maybe avoid Metcalf and DFS cash games, but otherwise it's all systems go.
Okay, and by the way, the DFS CSS podcast will be out later on Thursday, the best daily fantasy podcast that you will listen to every single week. Again, the full column for wide receiver cornerback matchups available on ESPN.com as you see the players that get upgraded and downgraded this week. Perhaps a better day is ahead for Antonio Brown after his three-catch, 31-yard debut for the Buccaneers. Let's play some Thursday Night Football game preview.
Game preview.
Yeah, there it is. Thank you, Daniel. Time to preview this game, one with huge implications in the AFC South as the Titans and Colts are tussling for first place in that division. We begin with the Colts, and we begin with the most confusing backfield in this game. Mike, as you've got Nyheim Hines, you've got Jordan Wilkins, you've got Jonathan Taylor all in the mix to some degree, and basically what I've done in my ranking is just kind of cluster them all together because if I do
hedging,
that,
love it.
Yeah, I'm hedging. That's exactly right, because I don't really know how it's going to go. You have a little bit of a clear conscience with this backfield. Jonathan Taylor at 24, 30 for Nyheim Hines, 45 at Wilkins. To be honest, I'm not sure the Nyheim Hines part of the conversation is quite as compelling. It's about Taylor and Wilkins. You have, and you are, as many know, one of the bigger advocates for Jordan Wilkins as a player in the NFL. You still feel like this is Jonathan Taylor's job?
I mean, they keep coming out every week and giving Taylor a shot, right? And he hasn't gotten it done the last couple of weeks. He's been outsnapped by Wilkins 60 to 45. And maybe I'm wrong here. Maybe I'm just wrong to have Taylor so far ahead and I should be giving my guy Wilkins more respect. But at the same time, Jordan Wilkins, even though he just continues to beat out Taylor for touches, he has one weekly finish better than 45th this season.
Is that right? Wow.
Even over the past 2 weeks, he has three targets. He's just not involved as a pass catcher. They like to use him on special teams too. They want Taylor to take the job already. You know what I mean? They're giving him a shot to do that, and that's why I have Taylor so far ahead, because he's the most likely guy to get it done. Also, the Titans, mid-pack in terms of yards allowed to running backs this season, but they've allowed 11 touchdowns. That's third most. They've allowed at least one touchdown to a running back in every single game this season. Who gets the goal line work? Jonathan Taylor, right? So he's probably most likely to be that guy to score the touchdown. Although I know Nyheim Hines randomly likes to have two touchdown games, but again, other than that, he has not been anything close to a fantasy option. Four finishes outside the top 40 for him. So again, if I had to pick a flex from the three, it's Taylor is my first choice. Hines, who is a high floor in PPR, is second. Wilkins is third, but it's a tough one. It's a tough one for sure.
Before I make the least compelling case ever to start a player in fantasy about T.Y. Hilton, Stefania, is he even going to play tonight?
He is available. T.Y. Hilton has practiced in full all week, finally after being out with this groin injury for multiple weeks, and it sounds like he's available to play. He will play.
Okay, that is good news.
I just you feel for him, right? He's T.Y. Hilton. I would like to have him finish the season strong.
And so far, he has not. He has one finish inside the top 50 wide receivers in a week this year. He was wide receiver 28 back in week 5. So it's not just that T.Y. Hilton can't be started right now, Mike. Is there a single Colts pass catcher that you should start this week?
No, I don't think so. I mean, and by the way, just add on to your point with Hilton, he hasn't scored a touchdown since week 7. Last season.
I was going to say, wait, what?
Last season.
I don't remember that 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. It's been a rough go, and he might draw the Malcolm Butler shadow in this game. He's been shadowing the past 3 weeks, and that's notable because Tennessee has been really bad against wide receivers this season, right? At least in terms of production allowed. I mean, you can really dive into it and talk about efficiency. They face a lot of good offenses. They've scored a lot of points against them, but the fact is, pretty much every wide receiver unit they've faced has been over their weekly average otherwise. So it's been a struggle. So if Butler is on Hilton, that should theoretically open the door for some of these other guys. To me, that means deep sleeper, deep leagues. Michael Pittman would be atop that list if I had to pick one of these guys, the rookie. But they're risky because we just don't know for sure if they're going to get the volume needed or the playing time needed to get there. But again, if I'm in a 16-team league or I'm playing in Showdown captain on Thursday Night Football, and I want to pick one of these guys, Pittman's number one, probably Zach Pascal would be second, and Marcus Johnson third, although they're all pretty close.
Stefania, it could be that Trey Burton's a little bit busier tonight than normal. If Jack Doyle is available or unavailable to play, where does he land in the game status report?
He's already ruled out. Oh. I don't know if you saw the hit last week. Anybody who was watching, really significant hit. Didn't look good when it happened. Still out with a concussion.
Okay, yeah, it did look pretty nasty at the time. I believe there was no penalty on the play, which is a surprising incident in the NFL. Titans have a bit more fantasy relevance week to week, but Ryan Tannehill, who is normally a quarterback that we discuss in the conversation as a must start, not there this week. I've got him 16th on my board, highest amongst all the rankers that are present on today's show. Mike, you got him at 22. I think I saw this stat somewhere, and I'm probably going to misquote it now, that if he has another multi-touchdown pass game tonight, he'll tie Kurt Warner for the longest home streak of that nature in, like, maybe forever, maybe, like, of all time, something like 12 straight games. He's been good at home, but this is one of the more difficult matchups he'll face all year.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's going to have his hands full getting that done against the Colts. Fewest fantasy points allowed to quarterbacks this season. Bottom 5 in attempts, completions, yards, touchdowns, completion percentage. They're number 1 in interceptions, so they're also forcing turnovers. They've only allowed one top 10 fantasy week to quarterbacks this season. Now, Tannehill, as mentioned, I mean, he has 2+ passing touchdowns in all but one game this season, so he's been getting you that. But at the same time, he has finished QB 14 or worse in fantasy points in 5 of 8 games, including 3 straight. So he hasn't been so hot as of late, and as a really tough matchup, I don't want to start him this week.
Okay, so if you can find a better option, whether it's a Baker Mayfield, whether it's a Jared Goff, whether it's potentially
Carson Wentz,
there are some other names out there to consider streaming this week. Derrick Henry should be locked into your lineups, even if he's a little bit lower than where he normally would be on our rankings. He's got 20 or more touches in 7 of 8 games this season. Talk about volume. Derrick Henry is the volume. He is the volume in that Tennessee offense. I'm telling you, he may not have the best game of his life tonight, but from a process standpoint, you always start Derrick Henry, even in a difficult matchup. You mentioned how that Indianapolis defense is stingy to opposing quarterbacks. That probably also means it's pretty good against opposing wide receivers, Mike. So how does A.J. Brown's matchup and I suppose Corey Davis's matchup impact their value this week for you?
Yeah, they've really actually shut down tight ends, as we'll get to in a second, but they've kind of been closer to mid-pack against wide receivers. 10th fewest fantasy points allowed, 6th fewest receptions, but they're mid-pack in efficiency, 13.5 yards per catch. They've allowed 8 touchdowns to wide receivers, which is a pretty decent number as well, about 1 a game. So A.J. Brown, obviously all systems go here. 7 or more targets in all 6 games. Mm-hmm. He's averaging 8 per game. That's terrific. We wanted more volume for A.J. Brown this season. That was key. He wasn't going to keep up his efficiency from last season, which was off the charts, but he's made up for that with more volume. He also has at least 1 touchdown in 5 straight games. Over his head in that department for sure. His OTD is 2.4. He has 6 touchdowns, but he's getting the volume. So even that, the touchdowns are basically a cherry on the top, right? Because he's getting the target volume. He's 15th on my board.
Okay, interesting. And by the way, Corey Davis, you know, probably not a roster lock for many. 41 on my board, 46 for Mike. heavy heart this week, right. And we send our best to Corey Davis, who lost his brother, his wide receiver, in his own right to a battle with cancer at the age of 27. So just devastatingly sad for the entire Davis family. You know that he will be playing to honor his brother tonight. Mike, you mentioned just a moment ago that the Colts have been really stingy against tight ends, and what does that mean for Jonnu Smith tonight?
Yeah, it's tricky. I'm at tight end 14, so I don't think he's what we thought he was a month or so ago, an every week starter. It just hasn't been the same since he came back from the injury. He had a late touchdown last week that allowed him his fifth top 10 of the season, but the problem is he was under 5 fantasy points in 3 straight games before week 9, and it looked like it was about to be 4 in a row. He had no targets until late in that game, and then he scored. I think he caught passes on back-to-back plays and scored a touchdown. That really bailed you out. He has a total of 10 targets over his past 4 games, not going to cut it. And he's facing the Colts' second fewest fantasy points to tight ends. They've only allowed 290 yards to tight ends this season. That is second fewest. No touchdowns for opposing tight ends. 9.1 yards per catch, 5.1 yards per target, 56% catch rate. They're all in the bottom 3 of the league. And, you know, you look at the past couple of weeks, there's been some sign of life for tight ends against them. The Browns, the Lions, and Ravens tight ends all have reached 12 fantasy points against them. That's over the past 4 weeks, those 3 teams. So maybe a little bit of crack in the armor there, but overall, they've just shut down that position.
Yeah, I think if you have Jonnu Smith, probably difficult to find a better available option on the waiver wire, but it's worth looking.
Yeah, maybe, sorry to cut you off, maybe not on waivers, but he was a guy you got off waivers in the first place, right? So you might have 2 good tight ends. I know I have a situation where I have Mark Andrews and Jonnu Smith, and I think I traded him actually to Kyle in another league where he was my backup as well. So you might have another option. I think this is a week that maybe you stay away from Smith.
Okay, interesting. Duly noted, of course. Both defenses in play tonight for fantasy. The Colts should be in play for you every single week. They're so good, so well coached too on defense by Matt Eberflus, their coordinator. And then also the Titans, with the way that the Colts have played offense this year, Phillip Rivers has been turnover prone because he often is, and they don't have a lot of explosive plays in the passing game, as we already laid out quickly. I want to give you 3 options if you're looking
How about we pick this game, Phil?
We should definitely do that. I should definitely do that. It's a great idea.
Yeah.
See, I can't go a full show with nailing everything that I'm supposed to nail.
That's not even true.
All right, maybe. All right, let's pick this game. Mike Clay, you, of course, are projections master. So if you had to pick a score for this game that's far more precise than my score, what would it be?
I'm going to say Titans win this game, and I forget my score. I forgot to write it down. So I'll tweet it later.
Okay.
Did anybody come prepared today?
No, you did. Stefania did, because Stefania always does. Stefania, you want to pick this game?
I'm taking the Titans at home.
Okay, tighten up for Stefania. I'm going with the Titans as well at home. Daniel, how about you?
I'm going to go with the Titans, and you want to know why?
I'm going to change my pick then. Go ahead.
It's because they're not overrated as a team. I think they are properly rated, but we did have a question on yesterday's show.
Ooh, wait, can I change my pick to the Colts?
You can.
Okay, Colts it is for me. Thank you. Shout
out,
Blue.
I want to know, yesterday we had a poll on the show. Who is more overrated, Mike Clay or Guacamole?
Wow.
Out of 4,739 votes, Mike Clay is 52.8% overrated.
I voted for Mike Clay too, so.
Really?
It's guacamole.
You like guacamole.
Guacamole is fantastic.
I actually got a couple, some people were very fired up about that.
They were fired up.
I mean, they were for both sides.
Now, do I like guacamole? Yeah, I like guacamole. Will I have it on occasion? Sure. But do I love it? Nah. Like, I don't live for it. Like, Stefania, do you love guacamole?
Especially when I make it.
Oh, my.
Really? Yeah, I need your recipe.
Yeah. I was going to say.
Yeah.
I like it so much. I tried to make it and it did not go well. So I need we
made
tried
a smoothie
few times.
Instead. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, I'm gonna go pick it up from somewhere. You know.
Yeah. All right. Well.
But still, Mike, you lost to food. That's
so
sad.
Listen,
but yeah. I'm totally fine losing to food. Food is awesome.
Wow.
If I'm gonna lose
guacamole,
anything,
though, yeah. I feel like we need to. Can we book Bobby Flay for a future podcast?
I'll try. Yeah.
Didn't we have on the show once?
We have had Bobby Flay on the show, friend of the podcast. Yep.
Yeah. I'm sure Bobby would love to spare some time with us, although. He probably makes really good guacamole.
I'll bet he does makes great guacamole. Yeah. Yeah. I want to close this outfield because you had such an awesome piece about Travis Kelce and just how fantastic he's been. I want to give it over to Kyle for our trivia question to be able to close this out with. There's also a Travis Kelce, a little bit of a trivia here.
Okay, let's go.
If Travis Kelce was a receiver, where would he rank on a per-game basis this year? Fantasy points per game. If Travis Kelce was a receiver and not a tight end, where would he rank?
Okay.
My instincts say 1, but there's no way he's ahead of Devontae Adams.
I will
no
go way. With, yeah, because
I'll
he
say
hasn't,
two.
I'm going to go with 6th. Stefania, how about you?
Ooh, third.
Okay, and Dan, you want to guess, Dan, or are you good?
Yeah, I said wide receiver 12.
Ooh, interesting. Kyle?
Field Yates wins closest. He didn't get it right, but wide receiver 7 he would be.
Wow. Nice. Wow.
Good.
Nice,
you know what it is that Travis Kelce is just so steady, but like I'm sure I'm guessing. Games. Here we go. Davante Adams, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, DeAndre Hopkins, Tyreek Hill.
AJ Brown.
I think Tyler Lockett.
Travis Fulgham, you're missing.
Yeah, wait,
they're
ahead.
Wow.
Fulgham. Oh, Fulgham. Adams, Metcalf, Lockett, Hill, Fulgham, AJ Brown.
Wow. Wow. Very impressive list. Who would have guessed that? Interesting. So good. Travis Kelce, man, you are the man. We are back on Friday with a full show. We're previewing everything you need to know in week 10, but Mike will be back with us next week. Great stuff, as always, from Mike. Go read his column. Go follow Stefania. Go find Daniel on field. We're back tomorrow. Matthew will be back. Oh, man. Yeah. We'll discuss that later. Peace out. You're in the 06010.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.